This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney. Time is 10 minutes after 2 o'clock, and we have many things into which we are going to dive together today. Tanner Saunders is on the other side of the glass. And, hey, remember that show we did yesterday about travel horror stories? I talked about the magnificent pilot for Southwest we had for the flight who kept us in the loop, let us know exactly what was going on every step of the way during 4 hours before takeoff, trapped in the airplane. And it's a small world, I guess, because the pilot sent a very, very nice note to the radio station. So, wow, that was kind of weird. It was a fun way to wake up this morning. Now, this part of the program, one of the frequent questions that people have, you have, is about your firearms, your licenses, your pistol permits, as the case may be. And it's been a while since we have addressed that issue, and Tanner is going to fire everything up when we are ready to go. We have with us on News Radio 930 WBEN, attorney Max Tresmond. And one of the things in which Max has a specialty is the situation involving you and your firearms and the law. And typically speaking, when we have Max on, a lot of people wish to receive advice from him. So the telephone number for you to call is obviously in the 716, and it is 803-0930. That's 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. Max is appearing, of course, on News Radio 930 WBEN as a pro bono public service. Max Tresmond from Tresmond Law, thanks very much for being with us. Much appreciated.
Good afternoon, Tom. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
So, it has been a while since we have spoken on the air, and I have to ask you, since we last spoke maybe a year or so ago, what have been the most common questions about their firearms that people have asked you?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, because the day after the election, the presidential election in 2024, we received a whole bunch of calls over the next week asking us if, because Trump was elected president, if all of the New York state laws were invalidated and when could they go out and buy an AR-15. And the truth be told, the clouds are forming over the horizon for gun owners right now across the country. In the states of Washington and Colorado, there are even more severe semi-automatic rifle bans than there are here in New York state. And professionally, my professional opinion is if things do not change, I think it's foreseeable that New York state laws will actually become stricter, possibly by the end of this year. And what I'm referring to is licensing requirements, possible firearms owners' identification cards, like they had in Illinois. We could be seeing that here if the courts do not start reversing some of these onerous laws.
given the political climate and the judicial system, some would say the judicial overreach, do you see that as even a remote possibility? I mean, isn't the Second Amendment basically going to eventually go away?
Well, I mean, that is a very good question. Whether or not we have our Second Amendment rights is going to depend on what happens this year. And the Department of Justice can take the lead here. The Attorney General has a wide range of options in front of her to enforce civil rights laws against the states. And remember, the Second Amendment is a civil right. In fact, it's a fundamental right. Under Supreme Court doctrine, a fundamental right is one that is essential to the scheme of ordered liberty. Now, when something is a fundamental right, the listeners should be aware that the United States Department of Justice, under the AG, can bring an enforcement action against the states for all sorts of violations. They did it in the South after Brown versus the Board of Education when it came to school desegregation. They've done it over the years for voting rights. They've done it for many different rights under the Constitution, and they need to start doing it for Second Amendment rights as well.
Maybe I'm wrong on this, but the way things have been going in terms of the what I consider to be judicial overreach, I mean, wouldn't it basically take one federal judge somewhere to say, you know what, I don't like the Second Amendment. I'm putting an injunction on it for the entire country.
No, that could not happen under the doctrine of nationwide injunctions. What could happen alternatively is you could see somebody bring a lawsuit in a friendly court. I would think it would be under a theory of a firearms distributor or a firearms manufacturer. They could file a case in Florida or Georgia and seek a nationwide injunction regarding the prohibition of the distribution of these guns. That's something that we could see happen if they decided to take that route.
What are the, again, I want to get back to the biggest questions that people had for you. You mentioned the day after the presidential election, people thought that somehow mysteriously all of the New York State legislation would go away. This probably is a stupid question, but it wouldn't be the first one I've ever asked. Since the Second Amendment is a federal thing, since it is, at least at present, a constitutional right, how is it that individual states are taking matters into their own hands, as you just mentioned, the state of Washington and elsewhere, with more restrictive measures?
Well, that is not a stupid question at all. In fact, that reflects the essential legal fight of our country since its founding, is the tension between elected representatives and the people that they represent. And that tension comes down to always wanting to push the limits of what the Constitution allows. But the big mistake that I think people make here is that they see law merely as words on paper. And that is a old, discredited view of the law that was known as legal formalism that was treaded in the 1920s with Oliver Wendell Holmes. Law is words plus process, and process matters. So it's up to the courts to enforce our civil rights. It's up to litigants to freely be able to access the courts to litigate these cases. But elected politicians, I would honestly be shocked to find out if even half of them have ever read the Constitution and read what the limitations are on government. Most of them are incredibly ignorant about issues of fundamental liberty.
Starting to wonder about whether federal judges have actually read the Constitution and the first, second, and third articles and the separation of powers, but perhaps that's a subject for a different show. Our guest is attorney Max Tresmond, and he is with the Tresmond Law Firm, oddly enough. And if you have questions about your own individual situation with firearms, maybe you've hit a snag, maybe you have some general questions about what is and what is not permissible, the phone number for you is 803-0930. *930 on the cell phone and 1-800-616-WBEN. Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney time is 218. Are there any other questions, Max, before we start taking some telephone calls that have been particularly, shall we say, in abundance to your office of late?
Yes, there have been a number of questions regarding Article 35 of the New York State criminal law here, or the penal law. And people want to know when they can use a firearm in self-defense. There's a lot of confusion regarding New York's limited castle doctrine and the duty to retreat. With the way things are going, people perceive that crime is through the roof. There's a lot of economic hardship out there. People are worried that they're going to be victims of crime. They are carrying guns probably a lot more than they used to. I mean, after the SAFE Act, there was a huge explosion in the amount of pistol permit applications across the state. And, you know, during the last decade, I believe almost every month was a record-setting month for background checks. But what we're seeing on an individual level, I don't have the statistics, this is just anecdotal, is people are carrying guns more frequently. They're very confused about what the limitations are, whether or not the bulk of the Concealed Carry Improvement Act, Orwellian named act, is still in effect. And, you know, they're frightened.
Well, wouldn't you kind of make the case, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but if somebody doesn't know the law in terms of defense of justification, maybe they might want to leave their firearm at home to avoid a whole lot of trouble down the road?
Well, you know, that's a very good point that you're making. Everybody should be able to familiarize themselves with the basics of where the law allows them to carry and not carry. Now, I have very, very strong opinions on concealed carry that are 100% aligned with you and probably the majority of your listeners on this. But when it comes to legal advice, if somebody's going to be staring down the barrel of an indictment, my personal opinions don't matter. I have to tell them the truth of how and when they can be indicted in New York State.
And then, of course, in addition to the criminal responsibility, there are civil liabilities to which you open up yourself.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the case of a civil liability case, if the theory is brought as an intentional tort, that you intentionally shot somebody, not that you negligently shot them, and they win, those intentional torts are not dischargeable under a theory of Chapter 7 bankruptcy. So if you intend to shoot somebody and you're not in the right legally, and you are sued and a judgment is obtained against you, you're not going to be able to file bankruptcy to discharge that debt.
So, again, we get back to the idea. Now, just before we get to the calls, I just want to clear this up. Specifically, what about Article 35, which basically tells you when you may and may not use physical and deadly physical force? What is up in the air right now? You talked about the limited castle doctrine. Can you explain?
Right. So, in New York State, there's a duty to retreat, which requires that a person who wants to defend themselves must make a reasonable opportunity to retreat before using deadly physical force. So if you know that you can do so safely, you have to retreat from the conflict, except when you are in your own home. So if you're outside of your house, you must have at least try to attempt to retreat from that confrontation before you could use deadly physical force. If you're in your home, you have no duty to retreat. But one of the biggest areas of confusion is that if a person does not have a reasonable chance of retreating, then the duty to retreat does not apply. So if you're walking down Elmwood Avenue one night and somebody approaches you and they have a gun trained on you, your back is up against the wall, you don't have a duty to retreat. In fact, I would argue that if a gun is drawn on you, you really can't reasonably retreat from that situation because there's no human being on the planet who can run faster than 850 feet per second.
I believe James Cook's agent may have argued to the contrary with Bill's management. I could be wrong on that. But when
maybe you were saying both. But
did I read somewhere that there are actually proposals in the state capitol to make it incumbent upon a firearm owner to retreat from his or her own home?
There have been proposals to do so, and you know that has come. That has been proposed almost cyclically for decades. One of the things that, and this is a very nuanced area of law or legal theory, is that it is always proposed if it is reasonable to do so safely. So there is an argument to be made that if the person, if you're in a conflict with somebody, but they don't propose or they don't do anything to you that you couldn't get away from or you couldn't stop. Some people believe that you should be forced to leave that confrontation before you can use deadly physical force. The other point of confusion that people have is what it means to use deadly physical force. You see, using deadly physical force does not mean actually shooting somebody. It means pointing the gun at them. So people get into trouble all the time where they think they can end a confrontation by opening up their jacket and exposing a holstered gun. Some courts have interpreted that that is the use of deadly physical force.
Wow. And that's good information, I think, for people to have. Attorney Max Tresmond is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. And one of his areas of speciality is you and your firearms and the law. And maybe you've gotten jammed up. Maybe you've got some questions because you're thinking about firearm ownership. Well, Max Tresmond would be the guy with whom to speak. And you may do so by calling us in the 716. Remember the good old days when we didn't have to do the area code? 803-0930. That's 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. I know we're going to have a lot of calls for Max, and I would encourage your early telephone call. You're not going to find somebody who knows more about the law with respect to Article 35, which, as firearms owners know, you really need to have a very, very detailed knowledge of that before you start going around with a firearm, because it's very, very easy to find yourself jammed up with serious criminal charges and lawsuits that you really don't need. Coming up on 226 at News Radio 930 WBEN, we'll get to your telephone calls coming up after Mr. Puckett gives us the latest on the news at 230 on a very bad day for the stock market, but not exactly unexpected. White Album. All right, Bowerly, News Radio 930 WBEN, Arthur Pressman, Traffic Attorney. Time is 2:36. We are joined via telephone by Max Tresmond, attorney at law, Tresmond Law Firm. And here's the deal. One of Max's specialities, I don't know why I like that word so much, is obviously firearms law, New York State, and also at the federal level. And if you have questions, and many of you do, about the whole pistol permit process, about maybe snags into which you have run, the phone number to call is 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. And I'm not an attorney, but I would just like to emphasize something again, and that is, if you don't know Article 35 like the back of your hand, don't carry a firearm, because frankly, the odds, let's put it this way, the risk benefit analysis, in my opinion, is it's much too much of a risk unless you know the law cold. Max, care to disagree with that or emphasize that? Max Tresmond? We seem to have.
Are you here, Tom?
Oh, now I can hear you. Yes, yes. I was just saying that, re-emphasizing.
I heard everything you said. Okay. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You're trying to keep people out of trouble here. There's a difference between having a right and knowing how to exercise that right, and you know, it's a right of every law-abiding citizen to keep and bear arms. But when it comes to using those arms, you really better know the conditions under which you're allowed to use them in self-defense. And I'd like to add one other thing. You really have to be proficient with how that gun operates. So I was speaking to Frank Panizek the other night, and you know, we were talking about the different types of guns that people purchase. The Glock is, for example, is a type of gun that is really well made and well designed for the purposes of safety and not having accidental discharges. There's a big issue going on right now with one of the models of the Sig Sauer guns, that the gun is just discharging on people who are not trying to shoot that weapon. A lot of police departments are getting away from those Sig guns. But whatever gun you have, whether it's a Glock or a 19 or 11 or a revolver, before you carry that gun, not only should you be familiarized with the weapon and the laws, but you should be familiarized with how the weapon operates, how to break it down, how to clean it, how to carry it safely. Then and only then are you in a safe legal position.
Great point. Let's get to some telephone calls. Attorney Max Tresmond is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Starting off the pack today, Adam is at the nose of the herd. Adam, you're on WBEN calling in from Westfield. Go right ahead.
I'll give a little backstory to my question. I got pulled over by a state police back on St. Patrick Day. I had like a broken headlamp, but he went through the process of me to go to a sobriety check and stuff like that, and said I failed his test, and he did a few more tests back at his at the barracks over there in Dunkirk. And what happened was, they had a specialist come in to check me out, and they stated, they said I was on marijuana, which I never even touched anything like that or smoked any marijuana in my entire life. And they charged me with two tickets of having to be driving with marijuana in my system and having the possession of marijuana, which I never had. And I'll be going to court later on this month to get a hearing and stuff like that. I was wondering what would be my situation. I'm going to fight it. I'm going to say not guilty, and hopefully I'll get out of it. But what if they did find me guilty, which be, I don't know how possible they, you know, since I never had it in my system, would I lose my weapons or my ability to own guns?
Well, that's a very good question. And a lot of that depends on several factors, whether or not the conviction would render you a prohibited possessor under 18 U.S.C. 922 subsection G, and what the effect of the conviction would be under state law. So let's break that down. I can't come. You have an attorney for your marijuana case, correct?
I have a public defender, which I never talked to yet, so I don't really know.
You've got the best lawyer that you can possibly get here, because those assigned counsel attorneys and those attorneys at the Legal Aid Bureau of Buffalo, they handle more criminal cases than anybody. If you're in a hospital and you need a surgery, you want the doctor that does the most of those kind of surgeries. They know all of the problems associated with it. So the first thing that any criminal defense attorney worth his or her salt is going to do is first see if the case is ripe for dismissal, and if it is not, then minimize jail time. Then and only then, under the standards of practice, will somebody ask how it implicates your firearms rights. I guess it comes down to, you've been charged with a misdemeanor, correct? Not a felony.
I really don't know. They just gave me a ticket, and I'm supposed to be at a hearing, I guess, on the 15th of April, and I'm supposed to see my public defender then. I'm more confused because...
Yeah, Adam, I don't mean to interrupt here, but you're talking about some really important things, and I don't care if you have to beg, borrow, or steal. Max is absolutely right. You need an absolute specialist on this case, okay? And he's absolutely right. The assigned counsel attorneys, many of them are quite excellent. I know this firsthand. But you need somebody who specializes in your particular field of the law. You can't go with a public defender on this one. You got to get yourself an attorney who specializes.
Well, that's the trouble. I tried, and I tried the one for the traffic attorney that you advertised, and they wanted $5,500. And I tell you the truth, I only have $2,000 left in my bank account, and I'm one of those Instacart door dashing people that I've been doing it for nonstop right now for the 8 months, and yeah, I don't know what to do.
Adam, I'm not an attorney, and I really don't play one here. But no matter what you have to do to get the best attorney you can get, you do it. You beg, you borrow, you steal, you talk to your friends, you talk to your family, you do anything you can. You need an expert because you're going into brain surgery here with a podiatrist.
Yeah, you know, to answer your question directly, this is. Your gun rights are going to be affected primarily based on whether you're convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor. If the case is dismissed or ACD'd, you don't have anything to worry about. If you're convicted of a violation, pretty much the same thing. If you're convicted of a felony, you will automatically lose your gun rights, but you can have them reinstated. The other question is very unlikely but possible if you're determined to be a user of controlled substances, you're technically a prohibited possessor under federal law. And that's another thing. It may be legal to use marijuana in New York State, but it is not legal under federal law.
Adam, we wish you the very best. I mean, there's two issues here. Number one is that for which you were cited, and number two, the ramifications on your gun rights, which depend on adjudication. And I think Max has done his best to help you out. And
I will.
I'm just going to try to stress this again and forgive my repetitious tone. And I'm not trying to be condescending at all. Okay, I'm just telling you, man. Just you want an expert in the field. You don't want somebody who is a generalist. You need a specialist.
I don't know. I'll try my best. I mean, this is all a mistake because the state troopers just railroading me. That's all they want to do. They just wanted to give me a whole bunch of tickets and see me in court and just screw, just fool with me.
All right, Adam, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Max, I mean, I'm sure you've heard horror stories all the time, and I don't mean to get off our primary focus, which is people who have issues with firearms and getting firearms, having firearms returned, et cetera. But when people face a legal situation, either criminal or civil, you want an expert in your particular area.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the attorney assigned to his case. Where did he say he was from? Dunkirk?
Chautauqua County.
Chautauqua County. Well, they got a good PD's office down there. I'm sure I can't say this definitely because it's not proper and I don't know the future. I don't have a crystal ball. But if this is his first offense, he's probably not in any serious danger at this point.
Let's go to Celeste in Cambria. Celeste, you are on WBEN with attorney Max Tresmond. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about recertification. Now, I recertified once when it first started, and then they changed the laws, and now I'm trying to recertify for months, and I can't get the system to work, and it keeps telling me it's an error. And I get through somewhat, and I get an error. I get through the whole thing. I put the submit. I get an error. And this has been going on for months. I called the pistol permit department in Niagara County, and they said to call the 1-800 number, or they gave me, I think, a 1-800 number for the recertification. And it took me forever to get them. And he said, oh, the system is down, and we can't get it fixed. And she just keep trying. Well, it's funny because I just tried it today, just as you guys were starting to talk, and I still get the error, and I'm worried.
Have you downloaded the paper form from the New York State Police website at firearms.troopers.ny.gov? There's a paper recertification. I would do that next and send a copy of that return receipt request to the New York State Police in Albany, but make sure that when you send in your paper recertification that you have proof that was sent. I'd also encourage you to take a photograph of your paper recertification and the envelope and have that on file.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to lose my, you know, I don't want to lose anything here. It's like they put these stupid laws on you, and then their systems are always messed up, and it's not right.
Well, why do I get the feeling that might not exactly be a coincidence, that maybe that's just part of the game in New York State?
A lot of the New York State websites are very finicky and difficult to use, and even sometimes with the electronic filing system for the cases, we're often spending hours on the phone trying to get that done. But I would encourage Celeste to send in a paper recertification form and have proof that she sent that in, and she should be able to check on the website in a month or so to make sure that that's updated.
Celeste, okay. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yes, the struggle of dealing with bureaucracy, we've all been there, and I don't know how many people are as I am. Technology, oh my goodness, give me paper and a pen every day of the week. Thank you very much.
I'm old. By the way, I think it's cold outside, too, and get off my lawn.
803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney time is 249. Let's go to Pat in Buffalo on WBEN with attorney Max Tresman about you and your firearms and questions you have about you, the law, and guns. Hello.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Mr. Tresman, my husband passed away in September. He's got a lockbox where he's got, I think, two shotguns and a rifle. Now, I don't know where to start in getting rid of these. I don't, how does it relate to, like, private sales, or can I take them to a gun show? I don't know where to start.
All right. Well, the first question that I have is your husband's estate in probate court right now?
No, it hasn't been.
Okay. Do you have any children?
Yes.
Does he have a will?
Yes.
All right. So the case has to be probated, and there's an inventory of those firearms. These are all long guns, correct? No handguns?
Correct.
Okay. Did you co-own guns with him?
No.
See, if you co-own...
Well, what do you mean if I... I didn't have anything to do with them.
Are you sure you didn't co-own the guns? Because if you did, then you wouldn't have to go through probate court. But since you said you didn't, then you will have to go through the surrogate's court. You create an estate, you probate the will, and then they have a firearms inventory, and you can sell them through an FFL. It's not hard to do at all. That's a federal firearms license dealer.
Okay. So I have to go through probate and surrogate?
That's the same thing. It's the county surrogate court.
Okay. Oh, nothing's easy, is it?
Well, that's not that complex.
No, it's not complex. If you want detailed advice, you can send me an email at admin@tresmond.org. That's TRESMOND.org. And I'll explain how to do all of it, but it is straightforward.
Okay.
Pat, thank you. Thank you very much. I think, you know what, don't stress yourself out over, really, this is going to be resolved. I promise it's going to be easier than you think. Thank you very much. Max Tresman, attorney, is with us from Tresman Law on News Radio 930 WBEN, talking about you and the law as it applies to you and your firearms. Let's go to Jackie in Buffalo on News Radio 930 WBEN. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Quick question, and by my own fault, I went to get my permit, and I went to a class that wasn't a carry permit. So I have my permit, but it's not a conceal and carry. I know they changed some laws, and I keep hearing about the DMV. Can I, I'll do air quotes, upgrade my permit to a conceal carry through that?
All right, let's break this question down. This is a good one. So you obtained a firearms license in Erie County?
Correct.
When did you obtain the license?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to say 3 years ago.
3 years ago. All right. So you have a restricted permit then?
Correct.
It's for a hunting and target restriction?
Exactly. Yes, you got it.
All right.
I thought I was going to a concealed carry, but it was my mistake. I signed up for the wrong course. Anyway.
So you've had that permit for 3 years, and you've had no incident with the permit.
Nope.
The Erie County Clerk's Office has a form that you can fill out for a removal of the restrictions. You fill the form out, they'll send it up to the judge, and the judge issues a decision on it. Without knowing anything further on the case, I think Judge Bowler is highly likely to grant your request.
Terrific. Okay. People have been telling me a lot of different things, and I didn't want to start a process that was going to take me down the wrong path and waste my time. Thank you so much for answering that so simply. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you very much, Jackie. Max, is that a common situation where people take the class and they think they're all set, but they actually ended up signing up for the wrong class?
I think Jackie misspoke here because she did obtain the permit, but prior to the new gun laws that came down the other year, the CCIA, it was common for the licensing officers in many counties to issue a hunting and target restriction to a person who got their gun permit for the first time. Some counties did not do that. And in fact, it's with the discretion of the licensing officer to restrict the permit. That had some very interesting legal implications, because under the penal law, a license to carry the gun is a license to carry. So if you were carrying the gun outside of the restrictions, you could not be charged with a Section 265 criminal possession of a weapon charge. But if the licensing officer, in other words, the judge, found out that you were carrying outside of your restrictions, he or she could suspend or revoke your permit. We have a very pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment rights judge here in Erie County, and he is very open to removing the restrictions if the restrictions are on the permit, with the caveat that if somebody has exercised poor judgment or, you know, really bad behavior with guns or anything relating to driving while intoxicated, that case is a little more difficult. But as the way Jackie presented the facts to the listeners, it doesn't sound like this is going to be a long, drawn-out process. She's going to have to fill out a form, down at 92 Franklin Street, the pistol permit office. Mickey Kearns has opened up satellite offices, too. She could fill out the form at the satellite offices, just go on the clerk's website, and then they'll process that, and there will be some waiting time because there's a huge caseload, and the judge will issue a decision, and my best guess is that he will grant her application.
Thank you very much for the call. We're going to keep Max Tresmond a little bit after the news with Tom Puckett at 3 o'clock, including the latest doings on Wall Street, and I believe the president speaking about tariffs, as he did yesterday here on News Radio 930 WBEN and across the country. Our phone number for Max Tresmond, talking about you, your firearms, and the law. And a lot of different questions have come in, and they've been really good. So your call at 716-803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. It is Bowerly News with Mr. Puckett coming up next.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
Well, one of our favorite guests is making his first appearance in a while, and that is Buffalo attorney Max Tresmond on News Radio 930 WBEN. And one of Max's specialties is your guns, firearms, you, and the law. And your question, 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. So far today, the questions, as expected, have run the gamut. I haven't seen a gamut lately, but they're running them. Let's get back to the calls on WBEN with Max Tresman. Here is Lewiston, and Robin is on the line. Robin, you're on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please. And if your window is down, could you roll it up? Because there's a lot of background noise. I think we'll have you ask your question, and then we'll have Max's answer.
Okay. Here's the question. I got arrested with a felony charge, and I had a gun permit. I surrendered the gun permit, but then I got a relief of disabilities from the state of New York. Can I apply for another gun permit? And I'll hang up.
Okay. Max?
Yes, you can apply for another gun permit. What was the charge?
We didn't have a chance to get into that because there was just too much background noise.
Yeah, it was very hard to hear him. From what I gathered, Robin had a felony conviction at some point. He couldn't have a certificate of relief unless he was convicted. And his pistol permit was revoked. Is he able to then go and apply for a new gun permit? The answer is yes, he can, with one caveat. He needs to have the name removed from the criminal database under the new New York law before he can buy that gun. And I do not believe he would be eligible for the permit at this time until he clears his background check.
Let's go to Dave in Buffalo with attorney Max Tresman on WBEN. Hello.
Hi. Hey, my question's in regards to the Law Enforcement Safety Act, the LEOSHA Act, H.R. 218. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay. In regards to that, it states that a member has to have a valid ID from the agency they retired. But it was updated in regards to individuals serving more than 10 years, I believe, and leave under honorable conditions is also qualified. But a lot of agencies don't give any kind of identification stating you're a member of, you know, X or Y agency and left after the 10 years in good standing. Is there any workaround the lack of identification?
You know, that is a persistent problem with the agencies that won't provide an identification card, and that's a bottleneck. They've got to come up with something for you.
So right now, there's nothing?
Yeah. Right now, the agencies... Well, the agencies have made cards up for people in the past. They've done it for our clients. As late as about 2 years ago, we had that issue come up, and the card was manufactured by the department. It was an ad hoc basis, but it was sufficient for them to qualify. So you should request them to do that. If you don't have the ID, you're going to run up into a serious practical problem here. What department, if I may ask?
Department of Corrections.
Okay, that is unfortunately going to be a very serious problem right now with what's going on.
In what way? I don't mean to be stupid here, but in what way is that going to be a problem?
I don't think the corrections officers are being treated fairly right now, just to put it bluntly.
Well, I can tell you that the department will not make up an ID. I've been out of the department for numerous years, and they will not make up an ID, nor will they let you qualify on their ranges to do the annual shoot. There are places that you can do the annual shoots. They qualify to meet the requirements to shoot your course of fire, but they will not provide identification.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think of whether or not there's a workaround. I don't have the answer for you right off the top of my head here.
All right.
Sorry, we couldn't be of more help, Dave. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So you've dealt with this a lot, but it's the Department of Corrections. And look, I agree with you on the corrections officer situation. And frankly, the way New York State dealt with the corrections officers, I think, tells you everything you need to know about the future of New York State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Let's go to Kathy in Orchard Park on WBEN with attorney Max Tresman. Hello.
Hi. I have just a quick question. I've had my pistol permit now since 2003. It was for hunting and target. And recently, I went to one of your satellite offices to apply to get it unrestricted. And they did it there. That's perfectly okay and legal, correct?
Not my office. You didn't come to. You went to the clerk's office. I'm an attorney, but yes, when you go to the Erie County Clerk's office and you fill out the form, if that is approved, then your permit is unrestricted. Did they give you a new card?
No. Well, see, that's the thing. I have my permit from 2003, which is a paper one, and they suggested that I go down to Franklin Street and get it changed from the paper to the card.
Well, you should certainly do that. There's no reason to have a paper permit. And did they approve? The question is, did the judge approve your upgrade request?
They approved it there at the satellite office. That's what my question is.
The satellite office does not approve anything. They process the paperwork. When did you have this done? When did you do this?
It was only just recently, a couple months ago.
I would wait another month if you don't hear anything and then call to see the status of your case. But between now and then, you should apply for or just go down and have the paper permit exchanged for plastic.
Okay. And once it's exchanged for the plastic, then everything is good.
Everything is good when the judge, who is the licensing officer, approves your request and they issue you a new permit, removing restrictions from your permit.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Appreciate the telephone call. A lot of women calling in today, the babes of Bowery.
Very good point.
Yes.
Very good point. Women are actually applying for gun permits and purchasing guns in terms of new gun owners at a higher rate than men. This is a nationwide statistic.
Let's go to Kevin in Buffalo on News Radio 930 WBEN with attorney Max Tresman. He's not connected with the government in any way, except he pays taxes. Kevin, you're on. Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of quick questions. One, where can I find, what website can I find the most updated codes and laws for concealed carry? And two, I guess this would kind of coincide with that. What are the rules for concealed carry in a vehicle with someone under 18? Is that illegal?
Okay. Those are two questions, two separate questions. First question is, are you a member of the 1791 Society Facebook page?
I am not.
Well, you're going to be this afternoon because that's where all of the gun laws get updated. And next week, there is going to be an interactive database that our office is putting up that covers all of the laws pertaining to concealed carry and gun law in New York State and the corresponding federal laws. That's going to be launched next week, and that will be announced on the 1791 Society Facebook page. Now, your second question deals with whether or not you're allowed to conceal carry in a vehicle if you have a minor in the car. Well, there's no Leandra's law in New York State for gun owners, thankfully. If it's legal for you to carry a gun, then it's legal for you to carry a gun if you have a child in the car or not. If it's not legal for you to carry a gun, obviously, it's not legal. And if you were stopped, there could be an endangering the welfare of a child charge as well. Those are really brutal charges to deal with.
Right? Under what circumstances would there be a charge?
There would be a charge if the person was not licensed to carry the firearm.
Ah, okay. Understood.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. I was a little. Okay.
Right.
Oh, perfect.
All right, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Max, I thought this might come up, but it is not, so I must interject with a question. A while back in New York State, they basically made carrying a firearm as difficult as possible because, I forget what it said, that unless a business specifically says they welcome gun owners, you are not to carry your firearm, and there's a whole listing of businesses where they're not allowed, such as places that serve alcohol. Anybody gotten jammed up with that?
To my knowledge, I have not seen a charge on any of those restrictions in Buffalo. That doesn't mean they haven't happened, because there are intake parts in the city courts and county courts all over the state, and there's all sorts of bizarre charges that pop up. And right now, there, even with a permit, you have certain limitations as to where you can carry a firearm. And firearms are prohibited, for example, in schools, educational institutions, all government buildings, all public transportation facilities, and private property where expressly forbidden. My understanding is the state is not enforcing the signage requirements for the business, but that's still on the books. And the real problem that we're facing, and I brought that theme up when I came on the show few minutes I was on the show today, all of these onerous gun laws are statutes in New York, and they are, if they're not enforcing them, that doesn't mean that they're not able to enforce them. And until some type of action is taken to do that, to bring New York State into compliance with federal civil rights law, gun owners are going to have a proverbial axe hanging over their head.
Back to the calls on WBEN. Attorney Max Tresman is with us for the next few minutes. Here is Phil of Cheektowaga. Hello, Phil.
Simple question. Caltech has come out with a new pistol. It's called the PR-57, and it doesn't have a magazine. It is clip-fed, almost like the old M1s. You have to load it from the top. So there's no removable magazines, but this has a capacity of more than 10 rounds. It'll hold up to 20 rounds. As far as I know, I mean, there are rifles that are tube-fed that have more than 10 rounds. It's a little bit questionable as to whether this gun will be legal for permit holders in New York, because there's no removable magazine. And that's what as far as I know, that's what the law refers to. Do you think it's going to be legal?
I know it's illegal. And in fact, this is a very, very good question that people raise, because they confuse the New York State semi-automatic, they call it the assault weapons ban. They're confusing it with the ban on large ammunition capacity feeding devices. Those are two separate bans. They are both under Article 265 of the penal law. So under New York State law, all of those are regulated by the SAFE Act of 2013. That prohibits any large capacity ammunition feeding device that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. Not only does it include magazines, it also includes clips and other feeding devices, regardless of whether they are fixed or detachable. The assault weapons ban defines an assault weapon based on the presence or absence of features, one of which is includes a detachable magazine. But a pistol that is clip-fed with a fixed capacity exceeding 10 rounds is generally considered illegal in New York. The law does not provide any exceptions for these firearms, such as those attached, as you referenced, with a tubular device, most common being like a lever-action rifle or a pump-action shotgun. Other than, you know, there are very specific and limited exceptions, but not for the Caltech. It's really important to note that these firearms laws are complex, but this one has remained constant over the past 12 years.
Phil, I hope that answers your question. Thank you very much. Question for you, Max. Just because something has the capacity of, let's say, 15 rounds, doesn't mean that you have to load it with 15 rounds. So is the issue the holding capacity, or is it what you actually have loaded?
The illegality under New York law comes in whether or not the gun is loaded. It just has to have the capacity to accept more than 10 rounds of ammunition.
This state sucks. I'm sorry. It does. It is.
Tom, I'm not defending any of these laws.
No, I know. Everywhere you look in this state, it doesn't make any sense.
No pun intended. I'm going to shoot straight with the listeners. If you consider the fact that a
a load of 12-gauge double-aught buckshot contains a certain number of 9-millimeter pellets. And when one single shotgun is discharged, you have as many 9-millimeter projectiles flying as a submachine gun. And with a pump action or manually operated shotgun, you can keep that rate of fire going to the point where the amount of 9-millimeter projectiles is indistinguishable from a semi-automatic or even an automatic firearm in certain circumstances. The laws make no sense. They are designed to restrict people's rights. They are not keeping anybody safer.
No, not at all. So I guess I really shouldn't ask you about my Thompson submachine gun and whether I know that's a federal statute, but it is time to go to James in Buffalo with attorney Max Tresmond on WBEN. No, I don't really have a Thompson. You're on, James.
Hi. My question is, if I'm prescribed a controlled substance through my psychiatrist that I've been on for quite some time now. Because of that, if I wanted to obtain a pistol permit, is there any limitations because of that?
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
He's prescribed a controlled substance and wants to know if there are disqualifications because of his drug prescription that would bar him from owning a firearm.
It's a very good question. The answer is no. Under federal law, that would be, I think he's referencing 18 U.S.C. 922 G3. That only refers to individuals who are unlawful users of or addicted to any controlled substance. Those people are prohibited possessors under federal law. But merely being prescribed a controlled substance does not automatically make you a prohibited possessor. The key factor, I would argue, is the unlawful use or addiction. That's where you get into a gray area, because sometimes, and I'm not accusing the caller certainly, sometimes people who have trouble after being on controlled substances for a long time, they have addictions, and addictions are medical problems. They're not criminal problems in that regard, but people have been jammed up over the years in that regard as to whether or not they're a prohibited possessor. But this question comes up all the time, and it's just not true that if you have an anxiety prescription or you were prescribed a Lortab following a serious accident or something like that, that does not make you a prohibited possessor.
James, good luck to you. Thank you very much. Max Tresmond, I want to thank you very much for your time today. And if people want to get in touch with you and Tresmond Law, how do they do so?
They can give us a call at 716-858-3115, or they can email us at admin@tresmond.org. That's admin@tresmond.org.
Max Tresmond, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time and your expertise.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Tom.
Max Tresmond on News Radio 930 WBEN.